The blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharma, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offer offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Samba is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By the compassion and comprehension that dissipates illusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma, I am heir to karma, I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering.
What should we look at this morning? Penny. I was having this image this morning come to me that just struck me as helpful. I've been looking at subpersonalities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was seeing one that kind of feels, a young one that feels like she is sort of has to atone for everything, has to apologize for everything.
Uh-huh. So a small, young part of yourself.
Yes.
Has to atone, has to apologize.
Right. Carries the world, you know, the, mm-hmm. the ills of the world on her shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And then mm-hmm. I actually found there was a subpersonality I discovered a number of years ago who's quite kind of angry and resentful and mm-hmm. resistant and
kind so of make actually, the world go away.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I was seeing how they work together. You know, how I project that one of them feels is carrying this weight, and the other one is just ticked off that that's been laid on.
Uh-huh.
I just begin to see them as a pair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you know, some others fit into the pattern too, and so. And meanwhile, I've talked about this. I have this photograph on my desk of myself at just under 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
2 years old, you know, bright and shining and happy. And so I, you know, I see these as things that come in later.
The one who thinks she has to atone for everything in the world, and
yes.
the one who really resents it.
And the others.
And all the others. Okay.
Yeah. So when I suddenly had this image of it, I just found so helpful was. You know, what I was getting was that, you know, when I experience these sensations or these reactions in myself, I'm beginning to see them in terms of these characters playing out.
Yeah.
And
yeah, which is part of the elegance of subpersonality.
Yeah.
So I feel this guilt or burdened or whatever, and, oh, okay, so there's a part of me here who...
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And seeing, you know, how it makes a lot of sense that these characters carry that... And also seeing how unhelpful it is to operate from them.
Yeah, because it really is operating from the past, isn't it?
And from people who are 4 and 5 and 6 years old.
Yes.
And so what I was seeing was that, you know, that it feels like there was, you know, there's this kind of original energy, this kind of just, you know, delight in the world energy
mm-hmm.
that just gets overlaid.
Yes.
And carried away and distorted and sucked dry by
sort of hidden by all of the stuff that comes afterwards.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching, I had this image of the interplay of those other ones. I just had this image of like, I mean, I just got it that the whole drama that they begin to learn to enact together is just so totally just their drama.
Yeah.
And I have this image of like the Globe Theater, you know, which is the Shakespearean theater that's round.
Mm-hmm.
The image falls apart in that it's open. And I'm imagining it's closed, but it's like this closed theater gets developed.
Yes.
And all these little characters are playing out this intense drama.
Yes.
And they all have these scripts and they all have their parts and they all play the same scene.
And their little costumes
and over and over and over and over. And I just got how it's just their drama. And it's like, so the rest of the world's out there just going along.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with what's going on in the rest of the world. It's just their little enclosed, hidden drama.
Yeah, and I just found the image so helpful.
Isn't that great?
And it's just so much encapsulated.
Yes.
And not being really available to actual input or interaction, there's nothing to interact with except itself, and so it just perpetuates and perpetuates and perpetuates.
Yeah.
Anyway, really, really helpful. Really helpful to see it that way, and how detached it is, and how sort of how self-generating it is.
Yes, self-generating, self-maintaining.
All internal.
All internal. And is there a sense that there's someone who could reach in and affect the play?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I'm seeing, is that, you know, what they need is the adult who sees that and can actually just protect him from having to just keep playing this out over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's not really serving anybody, is it?
No. Well, it's serving somebody. What I was seeing was that, when I was seeing that little, that one that's just so, that carries around this sort of sense of blame and guilt internally, what I was seeing was that what she needs, what I feel like I need to be with her, is the kind of fierce mother, you know, who just isn't going to let her bear that burden anymore. It's going to stand between her and that kind of message that she takes in from conditioning and owns as her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that I'm finding that image of the mother who's just going to take care of these children, the one that's working for me right now.
Who really cares about the children.
And is just going to... Well, first of all, I can stand back and see it.
Yes, and who's the only one who can?
And it's the only one who can.
Mm-hmm.
The only one who doesn't have a script.
Uh-huh.
And so then doesn't have to play it out.
Yeah. It's a nice image. It's a real concrete kind of image to be able to work with.
Yeah. And I think part of what was helpful, the two parts of it that are particularly helpful, I think, is the sense of how isolated and encapsulated that is.
Yeah.
And, and how it is a drama, you know?
Yeah.
it's a drama that it's just its own little play.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Is it the play's the thing?
Yeah, the play's the thing.
Andrea?
I'm looking at the radio show last week. There was a caller who talked about how he had these intense sensations and medicated himself with wine and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was...
And then woke up feeling lousy. And
And so I thought about that because when I was flying home on the plane, I was in the middle seat next to two strangers, and there was really bad turbulence. And I felt really claustrophobic. And I felt on the verge of having a panic attack, which rarely ever happens to me. And the sensations were really intense. And I'm just looking at all the things that were happening, and I was trying to reach...
On this plane ride, and you're sandwiched between a couple of strangers, and there's a lot of turbulence, which external and internal, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I think it was claustrophobia of just being... The seats are so narrow and so...
I think there's some chuckles of acknowledgement as you say that. Yeah. There's so little room.
So little room, and I kind of felt like my personal space was invaded. I felt like I had no personal space. And that it was very hard to do the practice.
Mm.
And there was a temptation to order, you know, some kind of vodka.
Send me a quick shot.
Yeah, and I was even thinking, God, I wish I'd, you know, gotten a prescription for tranquilizers or something. Because the fear was that I was going to lose control.
Uh-huh.
And if I lost control, I would start screaming, and you know, maybe I would be carted off the plane.
So there was a whole, it sounds like, a drama of predicting of what was going to happen if you didn't. But it sounds like you didn't completely buy into it.
Well, I was there reassuring myself. You know, there was someone reassuring myself. And then and then I kind of started tapping my feet so I wouldn't feel the turbulence as much. And tried to listen to the radio and, you know, the flight radio. There was
so shifting your attention.
Shifting
it sounds like
attention.
Very consciously doing things to get your attention to shift away from the drama that was being created.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I didn't consciously see that's what I was doing, that that's what I was doing. And then this self-hate came in and said, well, you know, you shouldn't have to listen, you know, you shouldn't have to listen to this movie or whatever because you should be able to be there with yourself.
Suggesting that you weren't being there with yourself. And you saw that.
And I think just the biggest fear, though, was that the turbulence. So what I was looking at is, I don't think I was afraid, per se, of the turbulence. Like, it could have just been this sensation, and I might have enjoyed, you know, oh, this is fun, bumping up and down, you know, in another context. But I think that it was the fear of what was going to happen next, and I was going to lose control. The fear that this intense sensations in my body meant that I was going to lose control.
And that would not be good.
And that would not be good, because I would start screaming and be carted off the planet. And that, I was really afraid. And that might have happened, you know, if the turbulence had gotten worse and had been there for a longer time.
Well, it might have, but it sounds like you also were doing that conscious shifting. You're tapping your feet and having some effect on the sensations that way. And then moving your attention to whatever's going on in the airplane radio show. It sounds like not going for the vodka or whatever.
No, I did. I did not go for it. And what happened was, years ago, I didn't have any fear of flying until, like, I don't know, like 15 or 20 years ago, I was on a flight, and all of a sudden it just dipped, like, I don't know, 50 feet, all, you know, like a roller coaster. And that's when
it leaves your stomach up here.
That's when the fear started. And I couldn't even board a plane. I was afraid the whole time. I mean, I could board it, but I would be afraid. And so I've gotten to the point where the only time I'm dealing with these sensations is when actual turbulence is happening. So it's gotten better. But just looking at the fact that I'm not comfortable with the sensations. I'm not comfortable with the intense fear. And another situation that brings that on is when a few times I've tried skiing. And I just won't even do it, because I think I could probably be good at it if I didn't have the fear. But the intense sensations are so much that I can't stand it.
Right, right. So it sounds like you had that kind of conversation going in the plane. These sensations are so intense, I can't stand it. And yet you stood it and found a way to be with yourself, despite what the voice was telling you.
Yeah.
And where are you now with it all?
Well, here I am. I think
they didn't cart you off the plane.
They didn't cart me off the plane.
Yeah.
There's still this fear. I think it comes to this fear. You know, I'm just looking at, why is this so hard to deal with? And I think the fear that I have is the fear of losing control. And not that I have control, but the fear is that the plane will lose control, that I'll lose control.
And that somehow would be bad.
Yeah.
Because might be an interesting place just to, well, would it?
Well, yeah, I mean, then the plane will just hurtle down and crash, and that will be the end.
If the plane is out of control, and if you're out of control, they'll cart you off the plane. Presumably they'll land it first. But but, you know, to follow through on those, because it sounds like you're actually dealing just fine.
Oh, I am.
There's a lot of discomfort, and you're managing, you're making your way through it.
Yeah, and I probably wouldn't have even brought it up if not for the radio show, which made me think, well, maybe it's something interesting to bring up and to look at, because what's behind it, and I think the thing behind it is this fear of no control.
Yeah. And the action of not doing anything to make it go away other than what you can do internally.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Jim.
Let's see. I have a friend who has expressed interest in me at these parts of the practice. And I've been helping mentor her a little and making a recording of things that she wants to remind herself of.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking a little bit yesterday, and I asked her if she had if she'd been listening, and she said, yes, she has. She listens to and from work. And she says, but when I get to work and get out of the car, all my stuff just comes right back out.
Uh-huh.
She sounded really distressed. And I heard myself say, it's not your stuff. It's the voice's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And and working on Sherry's newest book, we're talking about suffering exists in conversation.
Yes.
And you know, I got it kind of, I guess, more than I ever have, that if the voices weren't in there,
yes,
talking about the stuff, it would not exist. It does not exist.
Yeah.
The only place it exists is in the sound of the voice in the head.
Yes, and what somebody believes as they listen to the sound of the voices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you saw it when you said to your friend, it's
yes.
not your stuff.
Yeah. It's just stuff. Everybody gets a dose of it.
Yes, yes. A little bit different content. It's got different colors and textures and shapes, but it's all...
Yeah, it's not personal.
It's not personal. Yeah.
And it doesn't exist.
The voices stop, as you say, the voices stop and it's all gone. There's nothing there.
Yeah. So I've been hearing that for my very own self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that neat to be mentoring someone and then to have something bounce back that, wow. Really?
Yeah, it is. So I think last Sunday I talked about that I was talking with Sherry, and for some reason she told me about someone who makes a checklist of things, daily things that she wants to remember to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when she does them, she checks them off. And what it shows her is where she is. And for me, that was astounding. Because for me, it's about how I'm failing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the checklist is a contest.
Yes. Yeah, it's just a huge setup.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And that's... Let's see, how are these things connected? Oh, yeah. So, I still haven't made myself a list. And I really want to make a list. Put it on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I saw was that whoever pictures the list sees about 15 things.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it. No, it can be two things.
Uh-huh.
It can be one thing. But I haven't made it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the conversation. It's something about my stuff. It's mine. I'm operating out of it. And I'm believing it, listening to it, and creating it. Keeping it alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Paying attention to it.
It's still about failure. There's still that part of me who's going to look at that list,
yeah,
regardless of how short it is, and if those check marks aren't there, it's going to be failure.
Yeah, because that's what that part looks for.
Yes. Yeah.
Is how am I, how are you failing?
Yeah.
Instead of how are you succeeding?
Oh, just how are you doing?
How are you doing? Where are you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's the cunning place.
Yes. Yeah. No evaluation needed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is there something in that? Oh, I don't know how, but something about seeing that it's not your stuff.
Well, it's humbling.
Hmm.
In that moment, I could see when I was talking to a friend. It's not your stuff. It's no one's stuff. It's theirs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
And yet, in the long hours of the day, here's my stuff, and here's how it adds out, and here's a night that weeks ahead, and you get stop night and coffee in it.
So where's the friend who can say,
right,
let's just put down one thing.
Yeah.
Remember, it's not your stuff.
Yeah. So I think what I'm doing is finding the courage to make that list.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe put one thing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, top.
Yeah.
And then at the next Sunday, if there's not a check mark on it, can I find the kind place that just says, here is there.
Yes. This is what's in front of me. This is what's here to look at.
Brings up all kinds of emotion to think about it. To consider doing that.
For that being okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This much acceptance.
Yeah. Yeah. A week's worth of acceptance.
Mickey, and then Amy, and then down the row.
I was looking at that issue of being out of control, which is a familiar issue for me, and as it was being described about being in a place of complaint, I went right there and was like, it was almost like, get me out of this room, I don't even want to hear about it. I mean, this invitation.
So you recognize feelings on that, feeling like brink of out of control.
Yeah, and you know, for me, I mean, just the act of getting on an airplane is, you know, they're going to shut that door. And, you know, I mean, there's so much out of control there.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to open that door until it lands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going anywhere. I mean, I'm going somewhere, but not.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, it's such a familiar feeling. And the sensations it generates do not actually have to be externally instigated in it. Just now I would do, but I mean, even on other, I can just be in my house on a normal day, and the conversation will lead me to that place.
Yes, yes.
And
it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, because that's all it is.
It is
the voices.
I know, because there's nothing happening.
Talking us into panic.
Right. And it was just, when I just had this thought occurred to me, I mean, you know, I always say, you know, well, of course I'm not in control. I mean, there's no way to be in control.
Yeah.
But I just thought, you know, there's really no difference in getting on an airplane and closing the door than there is being on this great big ball of massive stuff that's going around this way every day and around this way every year, and I can't get off of it. And it's going to do things like, you know, hail and wind and drought and
earthquakes and
quakes, you know, and I have absolutely no control.
Yes.
But that illusion that somehow I can order my life to have control is just so, you know, so believable.
Yeah, and it keeps us well, it just seems right this second so clearly that it keeps us in bondage.
Oh, yeah.
That it keeps us completely imprisoned
yeah.
in those, the yeah. stuff of those voices.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just leads so easily to that place of, oh no,
mm-hmm.
you know, help.
yeah.
Rather than just, huh, wow.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah. So what do you do when you get to, oh no, help?
Well, what my new practice when I get to oh no help is just sit down and say, huh, here I am in oh no help.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because there,
mm-hmm.
you know, other than, you know, the self-medicating, which at the moment I'm not doing, so, you know, there's no way out of that.
Really. Yeah. To the wisdom of no escape.
But yeah, the voices might say, well, if you would just do this, or, you know, but I know that's not going to help.
And they're more than likely
yeah.
doing their best to
yeah.
oh, make it worse.
Make
while
it worse and, you know, a big place they can do it to me is about physical sensations, but
mm-hmm.
it means that I'm dying of a terminal illness.
mm-hmm.
And, you know, so what it tells me to do is, well, you need to go to a doctor and get this checked out.
Mm-hmm. Have some kind of faith that will
right, but that will
assist.
Somehow bring me back into control, you know,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I will either, I'll learn something, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I've learned that's a total scam,
mm-hmm.
because I do it, I go to the doctor and they say, oh, I wouldn't worry about that, that's nothing. And I mean, 30 seconds later, I'm in the car leaving that office, and it's like, well, what about this one?
Yeah.
You know, I turned to it one day a couple of weeks ago and I said, I could not go to enough doctors to convince
right.
you that I'm fine.
Yes.
So we just need to stop that
yes.
conversation.
And find whether there's something there mm-hmm. or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just so that happens. I mean, it happens. It can happen several times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. And there I am in that scramble, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I absolutely now know there's nothing to do but just sit there and
yeah.
wait till it passes.
Yeah.
Because
so here it is.
Yeah.
And it sounds like kind of being with yourself
mm-hmm.
in that.
Yeah. Just saying, well, let's see how this feels.
Yeah.
Let's just sit here together and notice it.
Yeah.
You know, and I haven't had a chance yet to practice it on an airplane. I will in a couple of months. you know?
Yeah.
So it'll be good practice to be practicing between now and then. So
yeah, and the image, the possibility of having a plane ride that's fun instead of a plane ride that's
mm-hmm.
caught up in that
yeah.
drama.
Yeah. the image of having anything that's fun instead of being caught up in that drama.
Yes.
I mean, honest God, you know?
Yeah. And that's actually the alternative.
Yeah.
No drama.
You know, someone I'm not sure that's what will happen, but you know,
yeah.
it would be great if it did.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Let's see.
Yeah, yeah. All the little parts of me that I find mostly inside me are so serious, so serious, so fearful, so needing to be good, so perfect, so scared, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to find somebody who just knows
how yeah,
to
Yeah, the process of getting straitjacketed as we
mm-hmm.
go through the process of being conditioned.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So looking forward to fun with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Report back.
I will.
Amy. Well, first of all, report on my new homework assignment.
Your new homework assignment?
And what I've been turning my attention to and stuff, the voices, is using the phrase whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a voice comes in and says its usual disparaging remark,
mm-hmm.
and you say whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So
and how is it?
It's helpful, and I usually follow up with something reassuring. And actually, I've been playing with sort of these really,
over the top of your shirt. Mm-hmm. I've been practicing typing with this typing program that has a audio to it, and sometimes I use the headset and listen, sometimes I don't. But when you complete a section, this woman says, "You're an exceptional typist." It's a phenomenal performance. It doesn't matter if I'm struggling with small keys and only do like 17 words per minute or something. She still says it with the same tone.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
It always makes me. It makes it more fun.
Yeah.
So I've sort of taken that on in other areas.
Boy, it's such a different feeling from what conditioning would do. I mean, it'll find a way that we're doing it wrong and say something about that in its own over-the-top way. Yeah, phenomenal. That's great.
I've been doing that with other things that I do throughout the day. I was like, that was phenomenal.
Dining room and you're on the stool and you're
and it got to the point where I thought I was going to throw up, and which happened to me once here in the meditation hall, and I
excused
myself and threw up in the bathroom. And I there was something that I just believed I couldn't stand it, or I couldn't throw up sitting where I was. And so I tried to make out the door and didn't get there. But,
I didn't throw up.
I didn't just throw up, I just didn't make it to the door. I made it to the floor. But maybe that'll be a challenge for me to sometime in my monk career to throw up in meditation.
See if it happens.
It was like I.
Of course, the thing is, what I'm just seeing is, the thing is, once something like that happens, at least we never have to be afraid of it again, because it's already happened. You know what I mean? That's done. I've done it. But anyway, sorry.
There's just something about that that place of I can't stand it, have to get out of here.
And recognizing that that's kind of the experience you had last week. And what else are you saying about that? Because it sounds like you were going through the, at least there was a conversation, oh my God, I'm going to throw up, I'm supposed to stay here, I don't think I mean, you were aware of all that going on.
There was the physical sensations, and then I think there's also just the, I might have been okay with passing out there, but not throwing up.
There's some qualitative difference
like
between the two.
Embarrassment level of throwing up and sitting for the next 20 minutes or something.
It's another one of those predictive, this is what it's going to look like. I'm going to scream and they're going to haul me off the or, yeah, I'm going to throw up, and I am going to throw up, pretty convinced, and then I'm going to have to sit here for the next 20 minutes, and having done that.
Yeah, which I do recall that people have done that.
But, it has happened. One of the joys in the master dream.
I guess I'm feeling a little I do have a lot of compassion for myself for being in that situation.
Yes.
But then there's also a level of disappointment. Like, I feel like the guidance is to surrender anything.
And holding both of those, it sounds like. That there's some disappointment and there's some compassion for what was going on and what you were experiencing in that moment. And it sounds like you are being able to hold them both, that you're not getting, I project you're not getting really slammed. It's just, oh, gosh.
Yeah. I mean, self-hate has come in a little bit, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, and that's one of those whatever places.
Yeah.
You
throw up and
sit there. Phenomenal. And you know, the humor is so wonderful to have that and to be working with that, because it really, from in my experience, it just changes the experience. And instead of it's just beatings and everything you did wrong, it's wrong. So looking forward to the next opportunity, sort of. Michael.
I've been looking at the fear of losing control and fear in general. And practicing, even though I didn't mean to, with fear this morning by making a concerted effort. Someone was really determined to do this all morning, to breathe deeply. And there has been what I could only call fear as I endeavored to do that. And one of the things that I think I've seen is that the depth of the in-breath, when beyond a certain point of the breath, when I breathe deeper than I usually do, that which lives in the shallow part of the breath, it doesn't live. And
somebody's got to. Would it fit in your experience to say something has to let go?
That's interesting. Because I'm resisting that phrasing, that idea. I'm resisting it. I'm really resisting to that idea.
Okay. Well, in your words, something that lives in the shallow breathing dies when you breathe really deeply.
Yeah. And so there's that fear of that death. And that, so the fear is of dying, of not existing, because it only exists in that shallow breath, in that range of the breath. And so, and then there have been times where I haven't been aware that I'm afraid. I'm just really uncomfortable and really don't want to do this. And I'm not seeing that what's present is fear. Although that's what I think is so. Because it fits with my experience.
And how do you know the feeling is fear? The feeling that you are describing when you breathe deeply.
Because that's what I've always called it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a particular set, it's a particular sensation or set of sensations that have always gotten labeled fear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. And I think part of that is the breath itself. So part of what gets labeled fear is shallow breathing.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That's
it seems when fear is there, shallow breathing is also there, or it seems as though shallow breathing is part of fear.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
So, it's been one way of exploring, or I found an avenue into seeing fear this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that.
It's sort of making it arise. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. And that's kind of been the theme.
Hmm.
So it's like, so I do that and these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing how this thought, well, and that's part of it too. So this thought, so maybe that's how I know one of the ways is there's a thought,
mm-hmm.
a fear thought, or a panicked thought, like this isn't going to go well.
Uh-huh.
And then when it occurs, when I'm at a really deep point in my breath, it usually that's not where it occurs. So I hear it
mm-hmm.
in relief. And it's like, oh, somehow I don't buy it because what is usually happening when it's present isn't happening.
Yeah, it sounds like it comes in like the sound is out of sync.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And the soundtrack got a little bit behind the action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So the one and so one of the
it's
things
kind of neat to see, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And
yeah.
So one of those things, I think, one of the fear conversations is that something bad will happen.
Uh huh.
So I caught a glimpse in that first conversation,
mm-hmm.
I think, of about fear of losing control. Of how silly the fear itself is,
mm.
like, and actually how probably the thing that I'm afraid will happen isn't going to happen. It's just that
mm-hmm.
some in some way I've become convinced. I believe that it will.
Yeah.
And somehow that reality of that thing that will happen. Is what's playing itself out.
That reality.
Mm-hmm. Without it ever happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't even need to happen because it's happening. And it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous in a way of just like, it's not, it's so far from what my actual experience would show me is the case.
Yeah, yeah. So what would it be like if there weren't any conversation about it?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. That's mm-hmm. Well, I think there, for one thing, there'd be the shallow breath, and nothing wrong with the shallow breath.
Mm-hmm.
And the shallow breath wouldn't actually be unpleasant. And it would be very liberating. I think that's the bottom line.
I suspect that's a universal, that can be universally applied to everyone's experience of the voices.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, but yeah, because without that conversation,
mm-hmm.
there wouldn't be anything.
Mm-hmm.
You had no evidence that anything was wrong.
Mm-hmm. And you could play with deep breathing and notice the sensations, notice conditioning, wanting to put labels on the sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Noticing that, well, just as you do, voices come along a little late in the action.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I've been playing with something in my hermitage with the connection between going somewhere in my head and losing some of my faculties.
Going somewhere in your head and losing some of your faculties.
Right. And sitting, watching outside the view as the sun is fading.
Mm-hmm.
And being fully present. And one thing, it's so still here at night. There aren't any night insects and stuff like I'm used to. And so it's almost like being in a vacuum.
No buzzing, no clicking, no.
Exactly, right. And so just sitting there in that quiet and just watching. And then something happens where I haven't been able to see how it happens. And when I come out of it, I can't really see how I come out of it. But the thing that goes is sight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm planning something, or there's some process that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a physiological phenomenon where the non-dominant eye, something happens to it. It's like a telescope lens or something. And I can feel that. And it like changes focus.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of watching up inside rather than watching out.
Yeah, and there's someplace up here that it tends to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't see anything. And I'm completely wherever I am.
Yeah, somewhere that's being made up. Yeah.
Right.
Some images, some past, future,
right.
Whatever.
I almost want to like get a camera and try not to just see what does that look like when she's vacated the body.
Uh-huh.
You know, when there's you know how bodies when they die, there's nobody in there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of like a version of that because I'm not inhabiting my physical body.
You don't have any awareness below the.
I don't hear anything.
Mental, the mentation,
right.
In a
don't
way.
Don't see anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just not. I'm just like gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're there for being gone. In a way.
In a way, when I come back, I notice then vision returns. Kind of like, oh,
yeah.
Back.
Yeah.
Back
here.
Yeah.
What do you make of it?
I don't know. It's kind of fascinating to me because it's like, how can you be here but not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the processes are going on automatically, but all of the attention has receded, so that there's no sight.
Yeah.
There might be mental pictures, maybe, but I'm not even sure if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
I might be envisioning where I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
it sounds like the attention is all in whatever's going on in here.
Right.
In the mind.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's none of it left for the physical self.
Right.
For the present moment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Notice I can be walking and have that going on and actually stopping and saying, okay, and just waiting for everybody to come back, you know?
Yeah.
Notice.
Yeah.
And then continue on. And next thing you know, I'm up there again.
Yeah.
I'll lean that way in meditation again.
Uh-huh.
Or watch that my eyes are now somewhere up here.
Yes. I think that's one of the best arguments for sitting with your eyes open.
Yes.
In meditation, because we can tell sooner that we've gone somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. Because with our eyes closed, we're just in there watching the future or the past or whatever's going on in there. Yeah.
So I don't know where I am with that other than just sort of noticing and watching how it'd be interesting to see how much of my time I spend there versus just fully inhabiting and experiencing in here.
Yeah, I suspect that you were describing perfectly the conditioned human experience 99.9% of the time until we get to an awareness practice. Because, like highway, we're driving along the highway and we wonder how we got from here to there because we were not not driving. Right. We weren't there.
Right.
Yeah. But to be able to sit there in the quiet and recognize that you left and then you come back, mm-hmm. and that it can be such a complete abandonment of the present moment.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I don't need substances anymore, you know, to do things or activities
to get away.
Or anything. No, it seems inherent in the conditioned being, mm-hmm. to leave. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because you don't, that seems automatic. And then to layer on ways of leaving, through various activities and engaging in things seems amazing to me because you're gone all the time anyway.
Yeah. And really need to be able to be seeing it in that kind of detail, it seems like. It feels like we can, you know, we can use that. And okay, how I recognize that I'm gone and how I get back. And what it's like to be back. The sunset. So you're there with this gorgeous sunset. Mm-hmm. And then you're not there.
Right.
And somebody missed the rest of the sunset.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden it's getting much darker. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Really interesting stuff. Okay. Jim.
Here's my first place. Get out of bed. Get out of bed.
Get out of bed.
Get out of bed. Check.
Yeah.
Shoes on. Check. Eat something. Check.
Sounds good.
Okay. Just setting it up for
success. Alex.
That's so funny. I was sitting here and this cartoon that I had seen a long time by Gary Larson came through. And it says socks first, shoes second. I'm wanting to have a copy of this cartoon. I don't, so neat that it made its way to this group. I just really fascinated by that. Anyway, something that I've been looking at since someone shared about it on Thursday. I was in a triad. And one of the people that I was in the group, little group with said something about how while the group was going on, the waterfall that we have out there had been going, and had been what she was doing was watching how it would disappear from our awareness, from the mm-hmm. awareness, and then it would come back again, and mm-hmm. it would disappear and it would come back, and that it has not changed. My attention has just left it.
Yes.
You know, I'm not.
Yeah.
It's not actually going on.
It's been going on the whole time, and right. my attention hasn't been taking it in.
Yeah.
Hasn't been in my awareness.
Hasn't
anyway.
Been my awareness. My attention mm-hmm. hasn't gone to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing this little experiment where I'm watching how attention goes off someplace. And then how to bring it back again,
mm-hmm.
and then
mm-hmm.
how it goes off again, and how to bring it back again, and doing these little things that are assisting me with bringing it back in between little reminders. So I have this thing where I'm reminding myself something that goes off quite frequently, actually, because it's really startling how fast the attention just zips off something
yes.
that's completely different.
Yep.
And the practices to, between the two points at which the reminder comes up, that there's something that God has set up the internal reminder
mm-hmm.
to remind me to come back mm-hmm. between the external reminder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been really a fun game so mm-hmm. far. Just looking.
Any tips on how you're doing that?
Yeah, more coming soon. It's an experiment. It's in its
uh-huh.
experimental stage right now. But
uh-huh.
I'm really excited about it, and it's something that had occurred to me for a while. You know, Sherry has given had talked about how I don't know how it's related, but I'm just going to say it because I think it is like covering up an entire TV set. With some sort of blocking, something to block out the whole thing, and then cutting off the tiny corner, and then focusing it on that, and seeing what is going on in that tiny corner that's mm-hmm. exposed, mm-hmm. rather than the whole thing, mm-hmm. and how it changes mm-hmm. the movie, of course.
A bit.
Yeah, and it's mm-hmm. like, I'm just playing around with how stuff gets created. You know, I'm just really fascinated about how the physical sensations generate responses that cause me to react a particular way and uh-huh. do things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in my scientist phase. If I was to look at my subpersonality checklist right now, you know, there's definitely the person who's interested in what I think Sherry would call experiments in truth,
uh-huh.
where it's
uh-huh.
just like, huh, it's neat. So resistance is coming up to doing something,
mm-hmm.
and it feels a particular way. And how is it that either A, I get stopped, and then B, go beyond it?
Yeah, so there's resistance, and what are the different ways of responding to it, and
yes.
how do I make those happen or not?
Yeah, mm-hmm. What happens when I go along with it? You know, this thing that happens is like, so I say I'm going to do the 30-day retreat, right? And at the end of the day, there's a part where
daily evening
review, mm-hmm. yes. And I watch. It's like if it gets to a particular time of night.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's like it's easy for the set of sensations and the conversation to get linked together to say something like very convincing, like I'll do it tomorrow morning when I wake up.
Yes, yes.
Do you know? And it's like the sensations. There's a relief in it at a particular point.
Yes,
you know, like where mainly when the covers get drawn over and I get under.
Yeah, yeah.
And I watch how it's like, I watch how this, like that initial thing started off with a sensation that it was like someone was looking for the sensations that would trigger the conversation that would come in
uh-huh.
with whatever it ended up saying.
Uh-huh.
That it's just fascinating to me. And then there's also, I watch now how actually doing the thing
mm-hmm.
feels. Like,
yes.
Like it doesn't stop the voice from coming up and doing all that kind of whatever it does, but there's also a set of sensations that come with actually doing what it is that mm-hmm. I said that I was going to do,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I don't know, anyway, it's just a big experiment right now, actually, because there's resistance, I'm playing with urgency, I'm playing with what it is that I, where I go when I say what I say, where I go when I look for information about how to respond.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And,
so a lot of really minute attention mm-hmm. to details of voices, of response, of how you respond one way, how you respond another way, what's going on in the body.
Yeah. Gosh, it just reminds me so much of the checklist. Like, this whole thing is just to see how it is that just like where I am, actually. It's not even about the stuff at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
mm-hmm.
about actually getting the stuff done. It's
kind
just,
of what's going on here.
It's like what it is,
yeah.
really. What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
What is literally going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the whole separate thing of and what's being said about it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's being said about it? And where is my attention? Because that's where the suffering is in all of it,
mm-hmm.
is that my attention can get drawn off someplace that I wasn't aware of. Like, where's
yeah.
that waterfall?
Like
up?
That, whoop, right
yeah.
now?
Yeah, like right now, as I'm talking, I'm listening to the waterfall
yeah.
at the same time.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't go away. I don't know, it's just interesting.
Yeah, having the attention and awareness.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just I'm enjoying practice right now, which is, I mean, it's not new. It's just that it's I don't know, it feels really alive to me.
Yeah, and it feels like that place that Sherry talks about, I think, in the Fear Book of being the pursuer rather than the pursued.
Yeah, yeah, that's what's occurring to me too.
Mm-hmm.
That in the scientist phase. It's almost like there's nothing outside of it because it's all just a big game / experiment, and I'm just being open
yes.
to whatever it provides me, rather than feeling like I'm in hot pursuit of something
yeah.
that I want to use to enable me to do something with for some future that I'm
right.
not you know,
get to that place that I've always wanted to get to.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just it turns it all around, and it feels like I'm in a place where I'm open to whatever it is that will occur. You know, what it is.
Which is really neat, because that makes it possible for, I would project, for you to see things. Because if you're not open for whatever, and you're looking for some specific result, how much can we miss?
Yeah, God knows. It's like the corner of the TV screen.
Yeah.
I can't see the rest of it. All I see is this little part.
And believe that's life.
And believe that's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
We're out of time. Thank you.